and glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around, and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and gay.
We're marching to a faster pace. Look out, here comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Not Just New Movies podcast, the show where we review a seemingly random film currently not in theaters. My name is Ben Pearson, and today we're going to be talking about Mel Brooks' 1968 film, The Producers. Joining me is my regular co-host, Tyler. How's it going, sir?
Ben, I like big butts, and I cannot lie.
Wow. That might be, like, of all of the little, like, your recent kind of interjections as I ask you how you're doing, that might be the most random one in the history of this podcast.
Long story short, you get sprung.
Oh, God.
Amazing. Well, with us also is a special guest. She covers a lot of music stuff and a bunch of other cool things at filmschoolrejects.com, and she's actually sitting here at what I would, you know, call Not Just New Movies headquarters, I guess.
Yes.
Allison Lauren.
Not Just New Movies.
Allison Lauren, welcome back to the Not Just New Movies podcast.
Thank you, Mr. Pearson.
Yeah, thanks for coming back. So, it
studios,
actually,
the Not Just New Movies studios.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good one, Tyler. I was actually looking at this, and I was talking to Allison a little bit before the show. She was, I think it was episode 33 or something when she came on the first time, like back in February of last year.
Yeah.
That was her first podcast experience, which
That's
is kind of cool.
You popped my podcast cherry.
Wow, man, we're talking about getting
bam, chicka, bam, bam, bam.
All kinds of this podcast is going off
chicka,
the rails.
Bam. Not the rails when I'm on, always.
It's unlistenable.
So there's that, and then Allison has actually been on two times since then, but I haven't been here for either time.
It's
so
true.
Tyler got to talk to you for the Weekend at Bernie's duology that you guys had. With the cat
I'm in podcast love with folklore, that's why.
Which is amazing, yeah. And then you guys just talked about The Shadow fairly recently, too. So
yeah.
People can go back and check that out if they're looking for more things involving Allison Folklore Loring.
That's
so,
me.
If you guys are just joining us for the first time, we start every episode with a character name game, transition into our media consume section where we talk about what we've been watching, move into our review of the week, and finish with listener voicemails and emails. You can always leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566 or email us at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com, and you can find this and every other episode of this podcast at notjustnewmovies.com. So, Tyler, I believe you have the character name game for us this week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
All right, let's hear it.
You ready for this, Folklore?
Yeah, bring it.
You're going to... All right. Today's, or this week's character for the character name game is Sergeant Jericho Butler.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Sergeant Jericho Butler. So he has a military background, I believe.
Okay.
I would assume.
Yeah.
All right. Man, so Allison and I will try to guess what movie that character is from near the end of the show. But in the meantime...
Sergeant Jericho Butler.
John Cusack.
Thank
say
you.
Anything.
Wow, she got it right. No, I'm
I love the concept of him holding up that boombox and the girl, the object of his affection, opening her window and being like, Sergeant Jericho Butler, get off of my lawn!
The dad from Frasier.
Oh my God.
All right. So let's move on into the media consume section. This is the part of the show where we talk about what we've been watching, any sort of cool events we've been to, comics, concerts, anything like that. So, Tyler, what have you been consuming this past week?
Well, Ben, let me tell you what I've been consuming this week. First on the docket, Cabin in the Woods.
Ah, awesome.
It's a movie. I believe you've seen this. Have you checked this out yet, Ben?
Yes.
I believe you were the one that suggested it to me.
I think I did, yeah. Because we were talking about it during the Friday the 13th parts 1 and 2 episode recently.
Folklore, did you check this out?
I have seen Cabin in the Woods.
Okay, all right. It was pretty interesting. I think I liked it.
Okay, so Without getting too much into like spoiler territory for people who haven't seen it yet, what kind of
favorite part? Bradley Whitford.
Okay.
All right.
Yep.
Good Guys alum. I think he might have been in like Law and Order or The West Wing or something like that.
West Wing.
Yep.
And yeah, just mustache month or whatever we're calling this month, even though they're very. Oh wait, did Zero Mastel have a mustache? No.
No. No. He didn't.
I don't know.
His hair looked like 40 different mustaches on top of his head.
Hitler had a mustache.
Yeah, there you go.
So yeah, Cabin in the Woods, I guess if you enjoyed, I don't know, I don't want to say if you enjoyed Friday the 13th Part 2, because I was hoping more for that, less for the other stuff, but whatever, I guess, yeah, you gotta go see it.
Okay, so did you like the direct? I mean, again, without getting too much into spoilers.
I think we can talk about it. I think we can put up a spoiler alert because we all three of us have seen it. So
okay,
we can talk about it.
That's fine.
And
all
it
right.
has been out for a few.
So
weeks.
Spoiler from this point on for The Cabin in the Woods. Go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, it's very much like The Truman Show, I guess. If you want to take The Truman Show and just make it a horror movie, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
It's as if it exists in the world with all the horror movies that we've ever seen in it. Although, from my understanding, like everything from the horror movies is real, apparently.
I mean,
and how the human beings have enslaved every aspect of horror movie genres or horror movie mythos and like put them into little cubicles.
Yeah,
and then them loose on people whenever they want.
The practical elements of that are never really discussed in the movie, but that's not really what it's about.
Yeah, it is. It is. But the one problem I did have with it was that like they arrive somewhere in the offices and there's like this one big button and like a security guard stand.
Yep.
You would think that button would be only in one place. With like Sigourney Weaver, and she'd be like, "Yeah, I think it's time to let loose the hounds of hell or whatever,
yeah,
or the dog or whatever the saying is."
Yeah,
but no, that was pretty awesome towards that point.
Yeah, the whole thing leads toward that last act, and it's just like everything gets unleashed, and it's really awesome. What did you think about it, Allison?
I liked it. I thought it was good for horror movie fans. It's one of those films where I think it was difficult to market it. Because you don't want to give anything away, but in doing that, people don't quite know what they're watching.
Mm-hmm.
I think the trailers make it seem like a typical slasher cabin in the woods mm-hmm. with a bunch of silly teenagers type deal. That ends up not being what it is. Actually, I read something interesting about it where they said that in the trailer, they kind of show that eagle flying into something that zaps it and kind of gives a hint at, you know, maybe this is a little different than you would think. And someone said that if they hadn't done that in the film, and then the actual next time that someone slams into that little grid thing, spoiler alert, would have been a much better reveal of what was really kind of going on rather than giving that little hint as they go through the tunnel, which I thought was kind of a good point because it kind of gave a little too much away, kind of not necessarily knew where it was going to snowball to. But.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the movie opens with Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford's character, so you already kind of know that the whole thing is a setup of some sort anyway, so I don't think that was, like, that much of a reveal that, like, things aren't exactly what they seem. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, it would have had more impact if, what was it, Hemsworth's character was
Hemsworth's
on that bike
character
or whatever,
hit that thing and just falls to his death.
Yeah, I mean, I really loved it. I thought that it's a movie that's very much for people who have seen a lot of horror movies and like know what to expect. But I talked to a couple friends who, because of the marketing, didn't really know exactly what they were getting into and were expecting more of a kind of a dumbed down horror movie. And that's not what this movie is at all. And they were like really pissed at the ending of it, which I love. I love the ending.
I was kind of pissed too.
I love that, you know, it's this massive like FU to humanity and authority and all this kind of stuff, and just like, you know what, we're going to be selfish, and if the world is the way it is right now, maybe it's time to push reset on all of society. So I loved like the ballsiness of it and just like the final shot and everything. So
I had like this whole storyline where the gods just kind of wake up and like Zeus and Poseidon are just like chilling, and they're just like, might as well go destroy mankind now. Like, they're just kind of like restless because they've been asleep for like thousands of years.
Well, it's cool because, you know, they tie in like the concept of original human sacrifice and like
I just didn't understand that it all relied on the American branch. Like every country, I guess, was doing their thing, but yeah, it was the American branch that it relied on. Like, yeah. I don't understand.
Well, I thought it was kind of commentary that we're the dumbest nation of all, because like all the other sects were like figuring it out. They were somehow taming the demons, yeah. and like getting past all that, and the Americans were just dropping like flies because they would just fall into every trap.
That whole thing was a little bit murky to me. I'm not exactly sure what they're trying to do there, but
because all of the screens said failed, as if the sacrifice in that particular area did not go down.
Right.
But according to Japan, like, did they succeed or did they fail? I don't know, because he was like effing them up at the end.
I think maybe it was like,
I don't know.
If one of the other nations or whatever got their sacrifice through first, then the Americans could have like let their people go, maybe, or something. It's like worldwide, there only has to be somebody, you know, one group of kids that dies, basically. So, and we were just
going to need a tutorial on
not
that.
Not capable, but
yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, check out my review. I have one at notjustmovies.com. I think there's probably a bunch of stuff at Film School Rejects about it if you guys want to read more. So check that out. Tyler, what else have you been checking
out? Also saw this movie, Muppet-themed Bean Elmo.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this? Have you heard of this?
Yeah, that was one of my favorite movies at Sundance last year.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I liked it. I thought it was a little heavy on the Jim Henson stuff, but that's okay, because I thought it was this guy's movie, but there was a lot of Jim Henson. But I'm good with that. Like, you know, I like Jim Henson, so it was like half Elmo guy, half Jim Henson.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, the movie, it's a documentary about Kevin Clash, the guy who voices and I guess performs puppeteers Elmo.
Yeah.
So yeah, it you know, kind of traces his, like, how he became involved with puppeteering and his love of Sesame Street and Captain Kangaroo and all these things. And yeah, like Tyler says, kind of toward the end, it gets into a lot of his relationship with Jim Henson and, you know, him. There's a lot of cool stuff, Tyler, for a lot of the Henson stuff that you've talked about and that we've talked about before on this podcast. Like, he was offered a job on Dark Crystal, but couldn't take it.
How can you turn that down?
So, yeah, there's a lot of cool stuff in there for people who are big fans of, you know, puppets in general, and especially, like, the Henson brand of puppeteering, I think.
It's on Instant Watch, so check it out.
Yeah, it's very, like, did you think there was more to it than that, Tyler? Like, did you enjoy it for the Kevin Clash parts of it as much as the Jim Henson parts?
I thought it was interesting that he kind of... I liked the story. I liked his story far as like going to these different cities and doing like really basic cable and then like local TV and then, you know, moving up. I thought that was an interesting story. And now he's like head of the Sesame Street crew.
Yeah.
Like he pretty much finalizes everything. So I liked his experience. So I guess the documentary on a whole, like his whole life is kind of interesting just because, you know, he gets to sit down and talk about like him meeting Jim Henson and being kind of there along with the creation of, you know, the 80s, which was kind of like the, I guess the Muppets kind of got started in what, 76 ish, like late 70s, 80s. So it was kind of like the heyday of Henson and his Muppets. And this guy was kind of like in and out of that scene, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
Cause I guess like I haven't really seen a documentary that goes into that kind of depth on what was going on, like behind the scenes and stuff. I mean, you could talk like Frank Oz or these people, but I haven't seen Frank Oz come out and do anything since like he was Yoda. Like he doesn't really do like documentaries, but he was in this one. He hardly said anything too. And I was like, you know, I think Frank Oz should have his own documentary or at least a book or something that kind of talks about his relationship with Jim Henson. Cause I think they were like best friends.
Yeah.
And, I don't know. Maybe those books and movies are out there. I just haven't come across them yet.
Okay. Well, yeah, if people are listening and are fans of that kind of stuff and know that one exists, shoot us an email or talk to Tyler on Twitter. Let me know what's up.
Definitely. Let me know because I'm not doing my own research. And finally, I checked out this animated movie from 1983, I think. Fire and Iced.
It's Fire and Iced.
By Ralph Bashke. Iced. Take two and call me in the morning.
Oh my god.
Mr. Freeze reference. Yeah, Fire and Ice.
Ralph, Ralph Bashke being the guy who
spin off of Ice and Coco.
He directed Cool World, which we talked about with Eric D. Snyder.
Ralph Bashke? Was that him?
Yeah, yeah.
Did he do the Lord of the Rings movie?
Yep.
The cartoon one? Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool World was terrible. but this was pretty good. I guess you had written on First Showing that this was getting a remake from Robert Rodriguez, mm-hmm. Sin City fame, and Desperado. And it's basically like your Sword and Sorcery, which was very popular in the early 80s with like Conan the Barbarian and Red Sonja and Krull. I'm going to throw Krull out there.
Sure.
I don't think anyone has seen Krull. but Fire and Ice is animated, so it's kind of weird that it's animation as opposed to like, you know, live action. So there's a lot of weird stuff because the animation, I think they use like human actors to get the motion of the animation down, so it's very lifelike, but it's also really bizarre because it's animated, so you're not used to seeing like cartoons move like human beings, I guess. I don't know what I'm trying to say, but there's like wizards, there's dark wizards, there's like a guy who wears nothing but a loincloth, there's like a butt or part of a butt in like every scene of this movie, which some may say is awesome, Ben. But, you know, most of it is male butt, but there are some lady butts in there. So it panders to both genders.
Okay.
Right.
I want, like, the main female protagonist is in, like, a string bikini the entire movie. Like that's what she wears. So what was his name? Like, Franzetti, whoever.
Yeah, Franco.
Did the artwork for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a fan of ample bosoms and small swimwear.
Okay.
And you get plenty of that in this movie. So I don't know. This is probably right up Rodriguez's alley because he's going to have fun with that because we know he just makes movies for the hell of it, as we discussed with Machete.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. He's just like, whatever, if I get to look at ladies in bikinis, I'm going to make this movie.
Yeah.
It's also on Instant Watch, so check that out.
What did you think about like the story and stuff? Did it live up to...
It's a sword and sorcery story. It's very basic, like evil ice wizards coming to take on the volcano people, and people are like, oh no! And so this one guy has to go and fight the weather wizard, not associated with the DC Comics character.
Yep.
And, you know, he flies in on like pterodactyls, and then there's like this guy who looks like... I don't know what he looks like. He looks like who's that guy from the Justice Society in comic books?
He
dresses up Wildcat. Wildcat.
Wildcat.
And he carries like a big axe or something, and he just like goes to town on the bad guys. So he's in there, and then there's like a mom whose son is the evil weather wizard.
You're just listing characters at this point.
And they all come together and they clash. Fire and ice, of course, are the themes. And lots of butts. Did I mention the butts?
You did, yeah. Okay.
Plenty of butts.
Great. No, butt-centric podcast so far.
Very, very butt-centric.
All right.
I opened with butts because I wanted to fire.
Right. So is that it, Tyler? Is that all you've been?
Yeah, unless you have any questions about fire and ice.
No, I think you've covered most of it.
Yeah, check it out. We can discuss that, Ben.
Yeah. I kind of do want to see it, though, because I'm interested in what Rodriguez is going to do with it. Because I think they rotoscoped the human actors in that original one.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, and that's a lot of the same kind of tactics that he used in Sin City. So I want to see what that looks like, because I think it's going to be more of like it'll look more like a live action version in Rodriguez's upcoming remake, whenever he gets around to that, like, I don't know, next year, 2 years from now, whatever. So, all right. So Allison, let's go to you. What have you been watching, consuming, listening to, whatever recently?
I went and saw 5 Year Engagement last night.
Hmm.
And I actually really liked it. I had heard some people say that they thought it was a bit too long. It felt like they were literally in a 5-year engagement, but I felt like I was really involved in the relationship. So I didn't really notice or think it was super long. I really did like the chemistry between Emily Blunt and Jason Segel. And I thought Alison Brie did an amazing job doing the British accent.
That was like spot on.
It was spot on to Emily Blunt. And I had heard her do a radio interview, and she said that Emily had actually made her audio tapes of her just speaking that Alison would like fall asleep to try to really get Emily's exact accent down.
Nice.
Which I think she pulled off really well. But I really liked it. I thought it was a cool rom-com. I went and saw it with one of my guy friends, and he really liked it. So I think it's definitely one of those that, like, you don't have to drag your boyfriend mm-hmm. or a guy to go see. They will enjoy it as well. So, yeah, it was fun. I liked it. Laughed. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, as somebody who's not, like, a huge fan of that genre, mm-hmm. This is another one of those movies that's written by Jason Segel right. and Nick Stoller, who are responsible for Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Right.
So if you like that movie, I think there's a lot to like in 5-Year Engagement. I saw mm-hmm. it and liked this movie a lot, too. So it's not doing very well right now.
I know, which is shocking to me.
It is weird.
Because, I mean, they have Chris Pratt, who hilarious. Anyone mm-hmm. who watched Parks and Rec knows mm-hmm. this. Allison Brie. I mean, it's got a great cast. And
Brian
they all
Posehn.
Deliver.
And Kevin Hart and Mint Taylor.
It's up against Think Like a Man, Ben.
Oh,
yeah, that's true.
Steve Harvey's got an iron grip on the box office.
I heard Think Like a Man was better than you kind of anticipate, you know, better than it should be, but I think 5-Year Engagement is probably way better than that, just based on the fact that I've seen
better than it should be.
Well, you
racist,
know.
Ben. I'm just kidding.
Oh, racist, yeah. Let's not even bring this.
That's
Tyler
pretty racist,
into.
Dude. It's all good. There's a white guy in it. I saw a photo.
Oh, there you go. Oh yeah, right.
Yeah, it's Turtle from Entourage. Yeah.
Oh,
Turtle's
right.
looking good though. You got to give him that.
I will give him that.
Turtle has dropped some lbs. He's looking good.
All right. Yeah. Wow. So I think that's a stirring endorsement from both Allison and I to
so
go
well.
See 5-Year Engagement.
I did have a question about it,
yes.
but I don't think it's a spoiler.
Okay.
But
no,
we've
fine.
Been a little spoilery.
That's
and
fine.
I know it just came out.
Yeah.
But there is, you know, at one point in the film, they move to Michigan,
mm-hmm.
where it snows. It's very cold there.
Right. That's not a spoiler.
Okay. And Jason Segel has a bit of a drunken night
mm-hmm.
and ends up wandering around in the snow with only a jacket and a scarf.
Mm-hmm.
So that means no shoes, no socks, no pants,
mm-hmm.
no underwear.
Mm-hmm.
And he falls asleep in the snow with none of these pieces of clothing.
Mm-hmm.
And he does end up having to lose an appendage.
Mm-hmm.
However, I was confused as to why he would be naked butt, naked everything in the snow, but yet something on the foot region would be what had to go.
Right, yeah. Oh, man.
That really confused me. I was like, I really thought that...
So there was butts in this movie?
There were. I mean, Tyler, there's lots of man butt in this movie.
Yep.
I mean, it's Segel. You don't get any penis this time, like Sarah Marshall, but you do get some butt.
Yeah. They do not answer that question in the movie. I think we have to assume, based on the way Segel's character was acting beforehand, he's kind of like a hunter at that point in the movie. Like, he's grown this massive facial hair and, like, become like a wilderness man.
Right.
So maybe in his drunken stupor, he, like, made a bed of leaves or something and sat on that instead, you know, so he doesn't have to get,
like
his ass
angle.
Amputated or
Got
something.
Got it, because I was really worried about ass amputation, and then I was like, really, we're not, okay.
That is a problem.
You know, I was concerned.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe that's more of a...
As a man, you're not too worried about butt amputation. You're worried about other parts getting
Well,
amputated.
I was worried about the other part, too.
Yeah, right.
Because it seemed pretty exposed.
All right.
Anyway, but I enjoyed it. You should go see it.
Yes, good stuff. All right, what else, Allison?
And another movie recommendation that I'm actually going to see again today. I saw it for the first time at Sundance last year, which is Sound of My Voice. And I'm not sure, I know it's released in LA this mm-hmm. weekend. I'm not sure how wide of a release it's getting, but it is a bit of an indie film, but it's fantastic. It's about an alleged cult here in Los Angeles in the Valley. And it's about two people, a couple that try to infiltrate it from the inside. So they become a part of it and they're trying to, you know, kind of prove.
Are they
the cult
trying
leader.
To like write something? Are they like journalists or
they're
something?
They're journalists
or,
and they're trying to do investigative journalism and prove that the cult leader is a fraud and just full of it and just duping all these people and like really get to the bottom of it. And of course, they end up getting really wrapped up in everything that's going on. And Britt Marling wrote and stars in it as the cult leader, and she's amazing. And I saw this movie, and I'm not kidding you, I was, like, so sucked in. I totally understood. I was like, I probably would have joined the cult.
Okay.
I would have gone right along with it. Even though you go in knowing, this is crazy, this doesn't make any sense, but it takes some twists and turns. It's really, really well done.
Cool.
And it's a quick one. It's, like, I think not very long. It's less than 2 hours. So
okay.
All recommend right.
on
that
a,
if you can
on a scale,
see it.
On a scale from 1 to 5 butts, where would you put it?
I don't remember there being a lot of butts in there, although I feel like there might have been one or two, because there is a ritual you have to go through before you can go into the basement to meet the cult leader, where you got to scrub down, get in your little sheet outfit. So there might have been some man butt. I don't really remember.
You just have to moon security guard. That's it.
Then you're good to go.
Book.
I mean, Britt Marling runs around
now?
The street in just a sheet for a little bit.
Yeah.
So, you know.
And Britt Marling is blowing up. I mean, you know, she's going to be in like a Robert Redford movie coming up. And I think she was up for a couple big like Tom Cruise movies.
Yeah,
I mean, she didn't end up getting those parts, but she's going to be somebody that you're going to be seeing a lot of in the upcoming year. So
and she's super talented. She deserves it.
Cool.
So not unwanted hype, not unwanted. And I guess the only other thing, I'm going to go to TV for a minute because, you know, I'm a TV nerd. Why is The New Girl now the funniest show on TV? It is somehow turned a corner that I do not understand. And this show makes me laugh harder than Parks and Rec now, which is ridiculous.
Well, on you know, as a brief aside, Parks and Rec is kind of losing a lot of steam with this whole
election
thing. It's really trapping them creatively. There's not a lot of stuff they can do with that. But anyway, Tyler, do you watch New Girl? I know you watched it for a little bit.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with Folklore here because I don't know what happened, but now it's hilarious.
It's literally the funniest show, and like I watch it twice. Like I'll watch it later in the week when I'm like
down.
I'm having a bad week, and I'm like, this is 20 minutes that I know will make me laugh. And even if it's jokes I've seen before, I mean, that cast is killing me. Jake Johnson, I mean, Zooey Deschanel, it's kind of almost they make fun of her more. Everyone was really worried that she was becoming too adorkable, and now they're making fun of her for it, which I think was the right move. But it absolutely kills me. I think they've developed the characters really well to this point, and they just play off each other, and it absolutely kills me. I mean, I think this week, Jake Johnson's character, he's having a bit of a life crisis, so he decides to become a farmer in L.A., which means that he's growing tomatoes in a bucket on the roof of their apartment, and he's gone full-on crazy, and he tries to, like, make a scarecrow because he thinks the crows are going to eat his tomatoes, and the scarecrow doesn't work out, and he brings it down to the apartment, and he's trying to put it in the garbage can, he's beating it, and his roommate's standing there, like, making a sandwich, and he was like, is this Martin Scorsese's Wizard of Oz? And I'm like, these are hilarious jokes. I don't understand what's happening. So
his delivery on most of his lines really felt like the guy that plays Nick, like, when he was like, sandwiches and sex. I want that. And then there was the one where he was at the guy's house, like sitting at his desk a couple weeks ago, and like the final scene of the show was him like just saying stuff while he was sitting at the desk. I'm like, did they just let him improvise? Because
they must have just let him riff, because he just was dating an older distinguished gentleman, and Nick, who Jake Johnson plays, got very wrapped up in this man's life, and he really wanted to aspire to be this man, and he had picked up like a wooden mallard on his desk and was petting it, and he was like talking to the duck and saying that he respected the duck, but he wanted to kill it, and he thought he understood hunting, and he was just having like this whole tailspin. And they're like, you would think they're throwaway moments, but they're so funny. If you're not, you can just watch it now. It doesn't matter what's going on.
Just
jump right in.
That's what.
And then the one where he tries to throw up because he drank too much, and he has to leave the car, and he's like screaming at the gods to have him throw up. He's like, get this evil out of me.
But yeah, he's definitely a highlight. His character is going through some tough times, I guess. I mean, he's like kind of in a dark place, but it's funny to watch. So.
Okay. Yeah, I watched the.
I handle my quarter life crisis the same way because of him.
I watched the pilot of this and then just never saw anything else. So.
That's the thing. Like the pilot, I don't think they had their finish. They had the Damon Wayans Jr. who ended up on Happy Endings. They replaced his character. I think it took them a couple episodes to have that core four or five people, and now they really understand how they're all going to interact and play off one another. And it's hit a stride. I don't know how long it's going to last, but you know, if it's a Tuesday night and you happen to be home, I think it's on at 8:30 or something. You can totally just turn it on and tune in. You don't have to worry about what's going on. And all I know is that they referenced a drinking game called True American. If anyone out there has the rules to this game, please send them to me, because I've heard bits and pieces of how this game works, but I want the full rules because I want to be able to play it. You know, there's something about lava and reciting presidents. But other than that, I'm a little confused, but I really want to play True American.
All right. So how does it compare? How does New Girl these days compare to what Happy Endings is doing these days? Like, would you put it on the same level?
I would.
Okay.
I mean, because I love Happy Endings. Yeah. I think a lot of people know how much I love that show. And I would say that even though Happy Endings is now on hiatus, when the two of them were airing I would be laughing more at New Girl than Happy. I mean, Happy Ending's always kind of cracked me up, but okay. New Girl has hit like some weird, like I guess I like comedy where people are suffering and falling apart, and New Girl's really tapped that market, whereas Happy Ending is kind of more jokey, fun, silly.
Yeah. I've stuck with Happy Endings, and I like that series a lot. So
yeah. Yeah, if you're a Happy Endings fan, I would say check
better out. Than Community.
Get out of here.
It is, Ben. It is.
All right. Anything else?
That's it.
Okay, cool. So I saw three things this week. Most of the time I'm like, oh, I've been busy. I haven't seen anything. I watched three movies. I'll talk about each one of them very briefly. First one is a documentary called Harlan County, USA. Ooh. This won the 1976 Oscar for Best Documentary. And it's about Harlan County, Kentucky, which is the setting for the FX series Justified.
Oh, so, nice.
That show's badass.
It is badass. I love that show. People should definitely check that out. If you're, you know, it's on break right now, so if you haven't caught up with it, definitely check that show out. It's coming back, you know, for next season and everything. Mm-hmm. Harlan County, USA is about the miners in Harlan and basically this like union strike and stuff that they were going through. It kind of it provides a little bit of insight as to the real life scenario that was going on in season two of Justified. I don't know if you guys
excellent remember, season.
There's that whole like Black Pike incident where in the season two of Justified where they were talking about you know, this big company coming in and kind of like taking over all the different haulers and everything like that.
What's a hauler?
You know,
when is that redhead coming back?
You know, yeah, exactly, Tyler. You know, hauler, the haulers of like
it's kind
of
like a borough.
Yeah.
And they call them haulers.
Yeah, it's like a country borough, I think.
This show is already on my must see list.
It's
for
amazing.
The summer. This is now bumped up.
So somebody whose knowledge of unions and strikes and all that stuff, basically began and ended in high school and you know, with just like being taught about the basic concepts of it. I've never really seen that in action. I mean, I know there's like the Writers Guild strike and stuff in Hollywood, but I just kind of read about that stuff peripherally. Harlan County, USA is a really great look at the real impact that a strike has on a community and kind of the different sides and like what people are thinking about and the sacrifices that they're making and how a community kind of has to band together and really make sure that everybody's on the same page and all that kind of stuff. So it's really, there's a lot of like political stuff going on in Harlan County, USA. So I would recommend checking it out if you're a big fan of Justified and you just want to kind of have the picture painted a little bit more detailed for you as far as the background and stuff of that series. So that's available on the disc portion of Netflix. It's not on Instant right now. One that is on Instant is a movie called Bare Knuckles, which, Tyler, I think you would love. It is terrible. It's a 1977 blaxploitation movie.
Okay.
And it's I wish I pulled up. Hang on. Let me actually pull up the Netflix description of it, of the plot.
I'm already sold, Ben. Don't worry about that.
That's what
you
sold me on it.
There.
What is a Bare Knuckles? Here we go. Sorry. So Bare Knuckles. No, not the 2010 version. All right, here we go.
My God.
With a bit of detective work and a lot of butt kicking, brawny bounty hunter Zachary Kane scours Los Angeles for a masked knife-wielding serial killer, hoping to net the $15,000 reward. But he's in for a surprise when he discovers that the sadistic target is actually a spoiled socialite. So, low budget, really, really god-awful movie. really enjoyable, though, because of how terrible it is. It's like it's something that Machete would be making fun of, but it took itself totally seriously. And apparently Tarantino loves this movie. Man, this thing is a lot of fun. If you're like with a bunch of friends or something and you're looking for a movie to kind of watch and make fun of, it's 90 minutes. It's pretty fun. There's a lot of really terrible stuff going on. Awful fight sequences. There was like probably 20 minute extended chase scene at the end of the movie.
That sounds glorious.
Yeah, and it's like the soundtrack is awesome. Tyler, I know you would love this from the opening shot because it is a smoky city at night with like a soundtrack going in the background.
Oh, thank you, God.
So
for making these movies.
It reminds me of something that you know, we just watched Heat with Burt Reynolds, and the only thing I could think of while I was watching Bare Knuckles is I wish they would remake this with Jason Statham instead of Heat, because this seems like something that Statham would do nowadays.
Jason Statham.
And it's really awesome. Like, they do some pretty gruesome things with it. The serial killer is like, he just like hides in the shadows, grabs random women and stabs them in the streets. So it's kind of brutal in that regard, but it's not like super gory or anything. And all of it is like so over the top that, you know, you can kind of laugh at it instead of like being legitimately horrified at it.
That's an efficient serial killer.
Yeah, and he, yeah, this
right in the sidewalk.
Gross. Like, it's one of the, he's like obsessed with his mother, and there's like, it's really disturbing getting into.
Who's the main character? Who's the ass kicker?
His name is Zachary Kane.
All right.
Yeah, and he, oh my god, I can't even believe I forgot to mention this part. There's a montage, like a training montage, where he like works out and gets pumped and gets ready to go out on the town and like take down this serial killer. And after, you know, like they've got this funk music and stuff playing in the background, and it cuts between shots of him lifting weights and like doing push-ups and sit-ups and all this stuff, and running through the streets like in full-on jeans and a long-sleeve t-shirt or a long-sleeve sweater. And then as soon as the montage is done, it cuts to a shot, like a medium shot of him playing a flute for 10 seconds or something. And he's just like,
wow,
the camera playing
a flute.
It is. It's a jazz flute.
Exactly, then, my question.
And then it cuts away and never mentions the flute again. Like, it's never been established that he plays the flute. There's no, it's literally a 10-second shot right after this montage, and then they just never mention it again. And I was cracking up. So
it helps dexterity.
Yeah, I guess, man. This guy
when he's bare knuckling.
Tyler, I really want you to watch this one as long as it takes. I'll wait as long as it takes.
All right. See. You watch Fire and Ice, I'll watch Bare Knuckle.
Okay. You got to see the tagline on the poster.
Okay.
Exactly.
I'm already sold, Folklore.
No, yeah, I'm sorry. This is too good.
There is a character called Black in the movie. And the tagline.
Way to be creative there, blaxploitation movie.
The tagline is Zach and Black Manhunters back to back, and it's them standing back to back next to each other on the poster.
You read that wrong. This is Zach and Black Manhunters ...
Oh yes, of course. The ellipses, the ever important ellipses. Okay, so that one is awesome for people who love terrible movies. Definitely check that one out. And then for people who like decent movies, this is one called Detour from 1940. It's a film noir that Dan Mecca actually talked about on episode 78 of this podcast. We talked about Beetlejuice. That was in his Media Consume section. He said it was really good. And this has been in my queue. What?
Don't say it three times.
Yeah. This has been in my queue for a long time, and I've wanted to check it out. It's actually just 68 minutes long, so that's why I watched it. For people who don't really know much about film noir, I think it's a great introduction to the genre because it has kind of all the staples of it, you know, the narration, the black and white, the kind of like shady deeds and people getting in over their head. As far as the plot goes, it's a little unbelievable at times, but a lot of these movies are. Yeah. So it's like really heightened drama stuff. It's done really well. There's a bunch of cool flashbacks, and just the structure of it is really good. And the acting is solid. And as far as film noirs go, this is one of the more enjoyable ones, because a lot of times I went on this big film noir kick probably 5 years ago where I just watched like a bunch of them, and a lot of them blend together and a lot of them drag on way too long. And obviously this one at 68 minutes does not drag on too long. It kind of gets in, gets out, hits you with what it needs to, and has a lot of the really cool things about film noir on full display here. So it's called Detour. It's on Netflix. Watch instantly right now. And that gets my endorsement and that of former guest Dan Mecca. So check
Don't
that one out.
Don't say his name a third time. He'll appear.
Oh, his name? I thought it was a Beetlejuice thing. Oh, okay.
Yeah. You got to be careful because it happens for both of them.
Okay. Little known
Equally
fact.
Terrifying.
Little known fact about them. There we go. All right. So with that, let's go
Dan
ahead
Mecca.
And move on into our review of The Producers.
Step one, we find the worst plane in the world, a surefire flop.
Spring time for Hitler.
Step two, I raise $1 million. Step three, you go back to work on the books. Only list of backers, one for the government, one for us.
Hey, I got out of it!
Does their scheme work? Does this girl know? Do these boys care? Who is he? Is she a Swedish toy? Or just another pretty body? And what's their story? See The Producers, and maybe you'll find out what it's all about.
All right, so The Producers came out in 1968. This is actually the first movie directed by Mel Brooks, which I did not know. He won an Academy Award for Best Screenplay. And it stars Zero Mostel and Gene Wilder. Wilder was nominated for Best Supporting Actor, which I also didn't know before I watched this. Allison Lauren, what did you think about The Producers?
I thought it was fun. I thought it was funny. It shocked me, though, I don't know what this film was rated. I don't know how ratings worked back in 1968, but there's just some racy stuff. I mean, the thing starts out and we have Zero's character basically macking on little old ladies.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets a little out of control. I mean, these little old ladies are crawling all over the room and...
Yeah, they're like grabbing
they're
him.
They're grabbing him. They're like trying to mount him. And like, I'm terrified they're going to roll off this man and break a hip or something.
Yep.
It was a little racy. I mean, we all know, you know, it's not musical.
Relative.
Yeah, it's like crazy premise, but I was shocked at like kind of what they got away with, and you know.
Yeah, he depicts a cat, I think, in the opening.
That's
scene.
Right. Oh,
he, like,
yes. Yes, there's a lot of pantomime and role playing a big part of it. And that's a jump from the moment the thing opens.
It's a really weird credit sequence.
It's a really weird credit sequence, and they keep like freeze framing on really awkward, horrible moments and like saying someone's names of who's in the film, and it just cracked me up. And I was like, I've never seen that approach, or you know, I don't watch a lot of movies that do that approach, and it really, really and it grabs you from the first second that you're just like, what am I watching right now? So no, I enjoyed it. I thought, I mean, you know, it's campy, it's a romp, it's silly. You know, I haven't seen the remake with Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick and the film, and I haven't seen the Broadway show, but I think this is a good intro, you know, kind of start from the beginning of what it's all based on, and it cracked me up. I mean, the premise is just so crazy and insane, and Gene Wilder deserves the accolades because he just kills it. I mean, everyone's chewing the scenery, but he is brilliant. He just cracked me up.
Yeah, he's really fun to watch. Tyler, what'd you think?
Yeah, the movie was kind of, like, starting from the credit sequence, I was kind of weirded out, too. I was like, wait, this... I mean, it was kind of funny, but it was kind of that weird, kind of awkward funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought the whole movie was going to be like that, but it actually, like, it changes
its
comedy
every
couple of scenes, kind of like Gene Wilder's character is, like, sometimes kind of, like, dryly humorous, and then next he'll be, like, out of his mind insane.
Right.
And I think Wilder's character is a lot like this movie, where it'll be like kind of subtle humor, but then just kind of outrageously corny humor.
Mm-hmm.
And once you kind of get a handle on that, it gets funnier as the movie went on, because you start to get used to the radical changes or the significant changes in tone.
Mm-hmm.
Not tone, but in comedy, I guess.
Yeah.
And once they introduced the screenwriter, the author, the German guy, what was his name? I don't know. He wore the helmet.
Yeah.
things started to get pretty funny. It started to feel more like a Mel Brooks movie. Because at the beginning, I was like, this doesn't feel like a Mel Brooks movie to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's very – he's very, like, slapstick or very subtle, like one of the two.
Yeah.
And so this was just kind of like – it's like, why is he – like, it's just kind of – it didn't feel like Mel Brooks's kind of comedy.
Yeah.
Which was kind of – I was kind of taken aback with. But then it eventually kind of hit – fell into place, and I was like, okay, now it feels like a Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah.
It is a weird mix between the subtlety and the over-the-top stuff, and I think I was like thinking it was kind of inconsistent as I was watching it, but when you find out it's the first movie that he directed,
right,
it makes a lot of sense, because you look at this movie and you see what he learned in his own career of like, okay, maybe this mixture isn't the best thing. Maybe I'll, you know, make one movie that's really over-the-top, or one movie that has a lot more subtlety to it or whatever. So, and yeah, I mean, we talked about Gene Wilder a little bit, but that dude is so awesome. We need to watch a lot more movies that he's in, because...
Oh, there he goes right now.
Yeah, he's cruising by on a motorcycle.
Dude, there's another one on Instant Watch that goes out of date May 1st, and it's another... Mel Brooks is in it. He doesn't direct it, but he's in it with, I think, Gene Wilder. Oh, is Gene Wilder in it? No, I don't think so. Never mind. I take that back. I rescind my comment.
Okay.
But there are a couple of Gene Wilder movies on.
I mean, I know Gene Wilder and will forever know him as Willy Wonka. Just because that's what I saw him as first, you know, as a kid and stuff. And like, that is such an iconic part. But seeing the relationship that he has as an actor with Mel Brooks as a director and things like Young Frankenstein and all the stuff that he's been in with him over the years, that's a really cool actor-director relationship. One of probably the most iconic, you know, of any. I mean, you've got, like, when you think about stuff like that, you think about, you know, Scorsese and De Niro and these types of people. But I think Brooks and Wilder are, like, right up there as far as, like, successful duos when it comes to blending directors with actors.
I'm used to the Young Frankenstein Gene Wilder, so I'm always expecting, like, the very like, I've never seen this before, but I'm not going to overreact kind of comedy. He's just kind of like an audience member almost, where he just kind of has a very not cynical, but very sarcastic, or where he just kind of calmly asks questions of Igor or whoever. Zero Mastel.
Yeah. I mean, this one, he was kind of like a live action version of Eugene from Hey Arnold, if you remember that show. He was like kind of
the guy that always got punched in the face by Olga.
He carries around this blue security blanket with him all the time. Like, he's kind of a nerd, you know. He's an accountant. Yeah. He's like, he's very reserved and like has never done anything bad in his life. And there's a lot of like, Zero Mastel brings out the worst in him in a great way. When both of them are, like, in a room together, just, like, going back and forth, this movie is really enjoyable. I actually liked it a lot more when it opened up and got into the play and stuff like that. But I feel like, as far as criticisms of the movie, I feel like from the point when you see Springtime for Hitler, which is, like, a really awesome opening song that has been stuck in my head ever since I've seen the movie, from that point to the end of the movie, there's such a small time that elapses there. Like, it wraps up really quickly.
Yeah.
And I mean, the movie's only 88 minutes long.
Right.
And I feel like I wanted to see more of it from that point. Like, they basically, and, you know, if anybody's listened to this podcast for a long time, you know that we just get into spoilers whenever we want as far as the main movie. So I'm going to spoil the ending
here. It's been out since 1960. Yeah. You're okay.
See, that's my justification whenever we talk about spoilers.
Yeah. So
it's been around for 47 years.
when they realize that the play is going to be a success and it completely undercuts their whole premise of what they're doing, they just decide that they're going to blow up the theater, and then they do, and then that's the end of the movie. Like, they're in prison, and that's it. Like, I was like, what? This is so fast. Like,
but
everything.
There's some hints in prison that they really haven't learned.
Character moments in prison, you know, they definitely haven't learned their lesson. They keep it going in kind of like a Blues Brothers-esque ending. Well, actually, I think Blues Brothers came out like 20 years after, or 10 years after this or something. I guess that's weird.
Well, it's not like, I don't know why would they blow up the, I mean, killing the actors is a lot more sound thinking than blowing up the theater, like, because you can just have the play at another theater.
Right. I was thinking the same.
Very true.
Yeah, and especially killing the actors, because the actor, Roger Debris or whatever. No, wait.
LSD.
No, LSD. Yeah. Lorenzo St. Dubois. Yeah. That's his name.
Come on, LSD. Baby.
He's the guy that makes the show, really.
Right,
like,
exactly.
You know, the show on the page is terrible.
Right.
And they know that. That's why they picked it. But his, like, Robin Williams-esque performance is really what makes the show a success, because he doesn't understand. He's an idiot. He doesn't understand what he's doing. And then the audience interprets that as, oh, this whole thing is a satire when it's supposed to be played straight.
Right.
So if they killed that guy, no other actor would be able to pull off, you know, would be able to kind of convince audiences that it's a satire like that. So I think, Tyler, you're right. Like, killing the actors.
I was kind of amazed the crowd. I know it's a fictional crowd, but as far as like a 60s audience being the first Mel Brooks movie, like, I was kind of astounded that they kind of picked up on that type of comedy, even if it wasn't intended. Like, the audience kind of picked up that this was a satire or a parody of Hitler.
Right.
When, like, I was like, well, I don't know how many parodies, like, Mel Brooks-esque movies or things there were, like, before this movie, because it's like, most people would probably have been offended the whole time by it.
You didn't have airplane out in theaters
right.
yet.
Yeah. Like, I was kind of amazed that they had picked up that it was actually, they were taking it from a comedic standpoint, like the play itself, which I thought was kind of funny. Yeah. Like, oh, people weren't dumb back then.
But it is quick. I agree with you. It kind of, you know, wraps up, hits the climax, and it's over, and you're kind of like, what happened?
I looked, and I haven't seen the remake either, but that one's like 2 hours and 14 minutes long, so they must have added a lot of stuff in there.
It makes me, I wanted to immediately watch the updated version because I know it's a bit longer, so I can only assume they extended and kind of drew things out a little bit more. Because, I mean, I was going to say, maybe it was a sign of the times. Like, maybe back then, 80 minutes was typical for a movie. Mm-hmm. You know, that's, you went to the theater, and that was the time you spent. And now, you know, movies 2 hours, two plus hours is normal for us. So
yeah.
I think it's a little bit, we're used to a little bit longer plot, whereas maybe back then they weren't.
Yeah, so. Totally. Tyler, do you have
any? Maybe they didn't have enough money, because he's always talking about money.
Maybe the money.
The producers, too, the search for more money.
Mel Brooks did not want to make out with any more old ladies.
Tyler, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Yeah. Not actually, no, not really. Like, it's so short that you... And we've already kind of talked about the fluctuating comedy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, yeah, I enjoyed it for the short time that it was on screen. But I do agree, Ben, that like it should have been, they should have went a little past the success of the play and kind of said, oh, yeah, because at that point it was like an hour, 15 minutes where the play had already started. And I was like, wait a second, it's over in 15 minutes. What's going to happen? And they kind of, like you said, wrapped it up real quick. So. Yeah, I think they kind of, I don't know, maybe they missed out on an opportunity to kind of extend the movie a little bit, but, I don't know. Yeah, I guess there wasn't really, other than the beginning, I really didn't have a problem with the movie because after it started to kind of hit the gears properly, I thought just kind of that subtle humor where they would just drop lines that wouldn't make sense to like a 1960s crowd. I wouldn't think, but maybe now that we kind of live in this age of very dry comedy, like where he gets into the car and it goes, we're going to like the Blue Velvet Room or whatever. Gene Wilder's like, why are we going to the Blue Velvet Room? And he goes, no, we're not going. I'm going for the next couple of weeks. I'm going to have to go to old lady land or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, that's so ridiculous. I'm laughing.
Yeah.
So it was when they started doing that, I think the movie got a lot better because that's, the kind of stuff I tuned in for.
There was some weird stuff in this movie, though. I mean, you've got, like, the Swedish receptionist chick that, like, really does nothing.
Kept getting naked and dancing. That
was
her going
just, like,
to work.
Dance around. And you've got those two dudes, like, the director of the...
The cross-dresser and then the guy that looks like...
Beardy Magoo or whatever.
He was the bad guy in The Green Hornet. What's his name?
Kato?
The German guy?
No, I don't know.
In Inglourious Basterds. I think he won an award last year.
Christoph Waltz?
Yeah, he looked, the guy, the sidekick looked like Christoph Waltz.
Oh my god, he did. Thank you for saying that. I thought that too when I was watching it.
Nice.
A very, very made up, kind of out there version, but yes.
Yeah, man, I don't know. Like, I think, like, you know, the beginning of the movie, it takes a long time, like, longer than I would have liked to get to the play. There's sequences where Zero Mostel is trying to convince Gene Wilder to get involved, and they're, like, two grown men wandering around Central Park together, like, riding on carousels and, like, just being weird, like, hanging out in a boat and stuff. Yeah, and I was like, what am I watching? What's happening here?
It got a little weird.
But
then it comes back with the Hitler auditions.
Yeah, the Hitler auditions were kind of
amazing.
A highlight, I think.
Yeah.
Like, people, I love it when, like, they would just cut off the performers and be like, thank you!
Right,
and, like, my favorite one, I think, was, like, they did a bunch of them in a row, and then, like, they had the music start for some guy, and before he even opened his mouth, they were just like, thanks, that's it. Like, you're done.
We just want singing Hitlers. All the dancing Hitlers go to the other, and like everyone leaves. There's only like a couple singing Hitlers.
Yeah.
I think one guy didn't even have a mustache, and another guy was in like a Speedo. Yeah, it was a very comical part of the movie.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the whole song and dance of Springtime for Hitler shows a lot of what Mel Brooks' sensibilities are. Like, he is responsible for turning this movie into an actual Broadway show.
Right.
And it's clear that he has, like, a love for that kind of thing. I mean, you see it in Blazing Saddles.
Yeah.
You see a lot of these song and dance numbers and a lot of his movies that he's done. Even, like, Robin Hood Men in Tights has, mm-hmm. you know, has musical elements to it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, this whole thing is, like, a really great kind of... I don't know if I would call it a great movie. I'm glad I saw it. I'll never watch it again.
Yeah.
I think it's one of those things that, like, it's a good look into the early days of all of these guys' career, you know?
Yeah,
like,
oh,
or,
definitely.
I'm not sure if Zero Mostel had been doing a bunch of stuff before then. I know he was in a movie called A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Right.
That was a really great film. It's like a Greek and Roman type mm-hmm. of thing. I saw that in a class in college once. But that one and this one are the only Zero Mostel movies I've ever seen. So
yeah.
I'm not too familiar with his career. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like in this one. It is weird at certain points.
It is, but I think it is a good glimpse into the early beginning stages of Mel Brooks and kind of his jumping off point. You can
mm-hmm.
see kind of where he really honed his skills and where he went from there. So
yeah.
If you're a Mel Brooks fan, definitely interesting
yeah.
to watch and kind of see where it all started.
Yeah. Wow. I'm looking at Wikipedia right now. Apparently this movie made $947,000 at the box office. That's
God.
Terrible. I don't know.
How much did it cost?
Good for back then. It doesn't have a budget listed.
$0.
Maybe they had to pay off 50% of the proceeds to
yeah.
a bunch of different old ladies.
Nice.
That's
from the movie.
That is. It is from the movie, Tyler, yeah.
tying it back in.
Yeah, all right, well, yeah.
Well, Ben, I did a Mel Brooks poll. You want me to shuffle out the results here?
Yes, please do.
All right, so on Facebook and/Twitter, the social media outlets, I will say, I put up a poll and I asked our listeners what their favorite Mel Brooks movie was. And do you guys want to know the results?
Please.
Oh, yes.
All right. So in first place, Elise, Leo, Lori, Jason, probably Jason Voorhees, and Ed all voted Young Frankenstein.
Nice.
I agree with that. I would have voted for Young Frankenstein. In second place, or tied for second, Shane J. Dryly and Jennifer all voted for Spaceballs
in
1986 with Bill Pullman. Or was it Bill Paxton? I can't remember.
That's Pullman.
Travis, Kyle, and John all said Blazing Saddles.
Okay.
Was favorite Mel Brooks movie. I think, well, I could have voted for that one, too. That one's really good. Scott actually voted for two movies. He voted for History of the World Part 1. I don't really care for that one. Don't really care for that one. And Silent Movie, which I have not seen.
Silent Movie is interesting. I definitely prefer History of the World over Silent Movie. But, yeah, I think History of the World is a little better than you're giving it credit for, Tyler. But, you know, we can get into that maybe one day if the Apple II throws it our way or something.
And then Joshua voted for Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Okay.
Robin Hood. Also another good one. No one voted for The Producers. Kind of alarming. And then High Anxiety was another one that I know of that kind of spoofs Hitchcock, I think,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
some regard.
Yep, that one's decent, too. We got my dad a Mel Brooks box set a few years ago for either Christmas or his birthday or something and watched a lot of these movies. So I've seen a lot of them, but none of them are really as memorable as, like, the classic,
right.
you know, Young Frankenstein, Blazing Saddles, Spaceballs, Robin Hood, yeah.
Robin Hood's my favorite.
Yeah, good sure. stuff, people.
Cool.
Yeah, so thanks for that.
Thanks for voting.
So, Tyler, as far as next week goes, I should have talked to you about this before we're recording a podcast episode, but I'm not going to be in town. So
okay.
I think we'll just kind of put the podcast on hold just for a week, or maybe you and I will decide to record one randomly throughout the week and release it as normal anyway. But we just aren't going to announce what movie it's going to be. It's a mystery
surprise.
Box. It's a surprise episode coming up soon. So there's all likelihood that we'll miss next week, but then we'll be back the week after that. So, or Tyler could
fight Apple too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know,
we'll
see.
Tyler and I can just do it. We're really good at it, just the two of us.
You guys very,
really are.
It could. You could come back 2 weeks
in
a row.
What was another? Did we just? I'm going to listen to The Shadow again and see if we discuss doing another movie, and we'll do that one.
I like it. We might have.
Okay, so yeah, people can look forward to maybe that happening or any number of things.
It might just be spewing folklore, let's be honest.
All right. So if you guys watch The Producers or if you've seen the 2005 version, shoot us an email. Let us know what you think about the differences between the two, or just if you've listened to this episode and have only seen the 2005 version, what you think the differences are between our discussion or whatever, how they kind of extended the movie out, whether it's more of a musical, all that kind of stuff, anything producers related, shoot us an email at notjustnewmovies@gmail.com. You can also call and leave us a voicemail at 904-469-6566. You can subscribe for free to this podcast in iTunes. Just go to the iTunes store and type in GeekTyrant-NJNM. You'll find us there. And you can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/notjustnewmovies and at Twitter, twitter.com/NJNMpodcast. I don't have any new followers, but we do have one comment that somebody left on our episode 85, the Friday the 13th episode. And this is from Jacob at the Panned Review, which I believe is at the pannedreview.blogspot.com, I think. So he says, this was a very fun discussion. I think the first horror movie to have shots from the killer's POV might be Peeping Tong from 1959. I haven't seen it, but it's about a guy who films his victims while he murders them. Apparently the movie is so controversial, it ruined the career of its director, Michael Powell. Sidebar, that was something Tyler and I were discussing, whether or not Friday the 13th was one of the first movies to highlight the killer's POV. All right, back into the message here. Also, Mario Bava's A Bay of Blood, a.k.a. Twitch of the Death Nerve from 1971, is credited as being a big influence on Friday the 13th. It features a double impaling like the one in the second Friday film. It's actually a pretty terrible movie, but critics have praised it for its imaginatively gory and violent murder sequences. Black Christmas from 1975 shows the killer's POV several times. He climbs into the attic window of the sorority house, and it's very creepy, if clumsily done, effect. I've actually seen that movie. It's pretty awesome. He says, and of course, Halloween from 1978 does it a lot. Pauline Kael commented that you get so many POV shots in Halloween that it seems as though everyone has his own camera. I totally forgot about that because I haven't seen Halloween in like 10 or 12 years or something.
That's a good one.
Yeah, it's been a good while. And then he says, there are actually two scenes in Friday 2 that scare the hell out of me every time. The first is when lone survivor Amy Steele is trapped in a bathroom, and you don't know if Jason will come in from the window or through the door. And the second is when she's in the Volkswagen and Jason slashes through the roof with a pitchfork. I think part 2 is slightly better than part 1. By the way, Amy Steele appears in April Fool's Day from 1986, which is a great spoof of slasher movies. It also has Biff Thomas F. Wilson from Back to the Future in it. So, thank you for the comment there.
I saw a DeLorean on the road today.
Oh, man.
That's pretty awesome.
The repairs have to be gregarious. I don't even know if that's the right word, but
right.
I don't think anyone fixes DeLoreans anymore.
I get your drift, yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah.
All right.
I got a couple of podcast comments myself. Ben, you want me to read those off?
Yeah, do it. Fire away.
All right. Another comment left on our Friday the 13th episode is from Panther Joe. I think you may be familiar with him if you're a fan of the show. Panther Joe said, I won't spoil it, Ben, but Jason kills a guy wearing the hockey mask and adopts it as his own, and I believe the beginning of the fourth movie. Spoiler alert. It's been a long time, honestly, but yes, watching him own souls as Pillowhead isn't quite as menacing. I also had a comment from Shoshana Ringer on our episode Heat, the Burt Reynolds vehicle. Man, speaking of Game of Thrones, Sansa was looking pretty damn fine on last night's episode. Upped my Joffrey/crossbow fan fiction specs.
Oh my god.
Shout out to Shoshana for dropping the Game of Thrones reference.
Awesome.
It's an upsetting reference.
Yeah, you guys comment on our posts. We will read them. We will read your emails. We will play your voicemails.
Sure.
Send us a message.
And we actually got one 4 minutes ago, literally, from Courtney Howard, who was on recently talking about... What movie was that she was talking with us?
Play that shit.
The Hustler, the Paul Newman movie. So last night, Courtney watched The Fly for the first time, the David Cronenberg movie starring Jeff Goldblum that we talked about back in episode 12 of this podcast. And I told her, hey, what?
And Gina Davis. Hi.
Gina Davis, yes, of course. So I told her, hey, we talked about this on an episode of the podcast if you want to check it out. And she just left a comment on that episode and said, okay, so after watching it, I can see the 80s cultural impact scare of AIDS in the material, and I agree with most of what you said. However, I thought it was a warning about being ruled by obsession. And also, not to sound pretentious, but also Kafka's Metamorphosis and Camus' The Stranger. Discovering life after getting a death sentence, and also a little comment about impending motherhood, the scares surrounding that. I don't know, I may have read too much into this. The last 30 minutes is a vomit fest. I'm officially over glazed donuts and ground beef after watching this. So thank you, Courtney, for the comment there. And yeah,
Walker
good stuff.
Says I have AIDS.
Wow. Yeah, that's bringing it back.
Nice.
The Walker, Texas Ranger lever from Conan O'Brien.
Ranger Osmond.
All right, so let's finish up the character name game. Tyler, you want to hit us with that name one more time?
Yeah, I do. The name for this week for the character name game is Sergeant Jericho Butler.
Wow. Okay.
Jericho Butler.
I'm going to guess the Killer Elite. Is that right?
I think correct.
That's a Jason Statham movie. He was in a movie called Safe that came out this past weekend.
You're on the right track.
Okay, so this is a movie. This is a Statham movie, then?
You could say that.
You could say that. Okay. Is it The Italian Job? No. He was in The Italian
correct.
Job.
It Crank?
It
wasn't Crank. Okay. This movie came out in the year 2001.
Sergeant Jericho Butler. Is that right? Butler? Is that what we said?
Yes, Sergeant Jericho Butler.
Okay. 2001. Yeah, you're going to have to give us maybe a director or something.
Co-stars Ice Cube.
Ooh.
And was directed by John Carpenter.
What?
Wait.
Is it Assault on Precinct 13?
No.
Is it Mission to Mars?
Close.
Is it Red Planet?
No. But you're on the right, you're in the right atmosphere.
Yeah, it's a Mars movie. Ghosts of Mars?
That's right.
All right.
Wow.
Oh,
Ghost
man.
Of Mars, starring Jason Statham as Sergeant Jericho Butler, to keep with the butt theme.
God, unbelievable.
Was not intended.
It was.
No, it wasn't.
All right.
Point to Ben. Ben got it.
I have never seen that movie.
One point.
I didn't even
ben,
know.
That one point. That 1 point for winning the character name game will actually go into your point score. For cinematic soundscapes, so you're already a point ahead.
Yes.
Of course, I forgot about this. All right, let's do it.
You want to start up cinematic soundscapes, guys?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Let's hit that theme music.
Welcome to Cinematic Soundscapes, the game created around our favorite guest in the world, Allison Fulton-Lauren. The name of the or the point of the game is to guess the name of the movie based on songs that appear on that movie's soundtrack. Now, as we all know, you can gain bonus points for guessing the artists that sing the songs that I'm going to give you. And as an added bonus, you can also name the year, which will also get you mad amounts of points. And at the end of the day, at the end of the round, or at the end of the multiple rounds, we'll tally up the scores and we'll see who's better at guessing the soundscapes of cinema, Ben Pearson or Folklore Lauren. You guys ready to play?
Yeah, let's do
yes.
it.
Yes.
All right, round one. This one I'm going to give to Folklore.
All right.
All right, you ready?
Yes.
This is just for you.
Okay. Oh, God.
The following movie soundtrack contains the songs Theme of Sadness, Ruined Landscape, Swamps of Sadness, and the song Never Ending Story.
And the song Never Ending Story?
Yes.
Is this from the movie Never Ending Story?
It's correct. Well done.
I have no idea who performs any of those songs, though.
That is 8,000 points for Allison Lauren. Ben's got one from the character name.
Okay.
Right.
A single point.
So those four songs are actually instrumentals or compositions.
I was going to say, were they all score, Tyler?
Yeah. By Giorgio Moroder.
Oh, yeah. All right.
And The Neverending Story is actually sung by Ramal, who I think is the lead singer for, like, not Oingo Boingo.
Some weird
out.
80s group, I'm sure.
Yeah,
that movie scared the crap out of me as a kid.
Yeah, 1984, Neverending Story. Nice job, top. Nice job.
Thank you.
All right, now we turn to Ben, still in round one. Ben, the following songs are in this movie's soundtrack. You have to guess the movie.
Okay.
Song Higher Ground, the song Sense Around, and the song The Power. Now remember, you get bonus points for guessing the artists, and of course, the movie in the year.
Do I get multiple guesses?
Yeah, go ahead, check.
Okay, Back to School, the Rodney Dangerfield movie? No, okay.
Amazing.
Higher Ground, man, this sounds so 80s.
The Power.
I've got The Power.
Higher Ground. All I can think of is like John Hughes stuff. Is it a John Hughes movie?
That was the last Cinematic Soundscapes. Very John Hughes heavy, I think.
It was very John
Hughes. Okay. I don't know, man. I think I'm going to have to pass to Folklore, see if she knows.
All right, Allison, for the steal.
Oh my gosh, I have no idea.
Hearing them again, the songs Higher Ground, the song Sense Around, and the song The Power.
Can I know what year this film came out?
The year is 1995.
Ooh. 95.
I can sing a little bit of the song.
Please sing a little bit of the songs. I think that would help.
People, keep on roaring. Keep on reaching. Love.
Am I allowed to ask? What were my hints that I was allowed to ask? I'm allowed to ask who's in it? No, I can't remember.
You can ask. I guess you can request the artists if you want.
Okay. God, and I know who does The Power, and I'm blanking on it right now. This is bugging me.
I don't know, man. I think you're going to have to give us some more hints here.
All right. Well, Higher Ground is sung by the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Right. Yeah, I knew that.
Sense Around is sung by They Might Be Giants.
Oh.
And The Power is sung by a band or a group called Snap! Exclamation point. You're probably never going to see the movie.
Surf Ninjas.
Nice.
Ooh, so close, but no. Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, the movie, was what we were looking for.
Oh, I never would have gotten there.
No, me neither.
Never. Even if you told me who was in that movie, I would have had no clue.
Great soundtrack, by the way.
Amazing.
So, yes.
Exclamation point.
Yes, yeah, Snap. So, at the end of round one, Ben has 1 point. Allison has 8,000.
Okay.
Sounds about right.
Lead. All right, round two. Okay, we'll start with Ben this time.
All right.
All right, following songs appear on this movie's soundtrack. Boys Will Be Boys, I Swear I'm in Love, Wishes. Okay, just those three.
Sound like
wow,
one more.
Okay, I was expecting
there
that.
There is one more, but I'm only going to give that away if you can't guess that.
I don't know.
Boys Will Be Boys.
What year?
1996.
96?
Boys Will Be Boys. I swear I'm in love. Wishes.
This is so difficult.
Wishes is sung by Nathan Morris.
This game is so difficult.
I Swear I'm in Love is sung by Usher. And Boys Will Be Boys is sung by the Backstreet Boys.
Love and Basketball.
Ooh, very, 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 very close to the theme here. The last song is actually
She Got Game.
The last song is actually sung by famed NBA star Shaquille O'Neal.
Come on,
is it
Ben.
Kazam?
It is Kazam.
Amazing. Amazing.
Final song is I Am Kazam, sung by Shaquille.
That would have given it away.
All right, Ben, nice job. Another 3 points to your score.
Okay.
You're up to 4 right now. Right
Thanks.
There. All right, Allison Lauren.
Yes. Oh, God.
Round 2.
Yes.
following songs are on this movie's soundtrack. The score entitled Nabbed, the song Poor Jack, and the song Town Meeting Song.
Oh my god. What year did this movie come out?
1993.
Town Meeting Song.
The composer is none other than Danny Elfman.
Of course it is.
It was actually in Oingo Boingo.
Nice. Oh my god. Am I allowed to ask what genre of film this was?
Yes, it's in like stop motion animation holiday themed movie genre.
Oh. What was stop motion in 93?
I know.
You know. Uh-oh, don't steal this one from me. Oh my god, I never watched that kind of stuff back then. I'm going to have to toss it to Ben. I'm blanking right now.
Oh man.
I'm going to know it the second you
steal.
Say it.
A Nightmare Before Christmas.
Oh!
That is correct. Nightmare Before Christmas. 23? Worth a blistering 50 points.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm up to 54.
I deserve that.
54 points to Allison Lauren's 8,000. Wow, you really scored on that round one question.
That never ending story. It's a gold mine.
Oh, I'm telling you. All right, let's go to the tiebreaker.
Okay,
the tiebreaker. All right. This is up for grabs, so whoever answers first wins the point allotted.
Okay.
Following movie contains the songs on its soundtrack, Winner Takes All, the song I Will Be Strong, the song Bad Night, and the instrumental The Fight. The Fight is composed by Giorgio Moroder. Bad Night is sung by Frank Stallone.
Oh my god.
I Will Be Strong, sung by Eddie Money, and Winner Takes It All, sung by Sammy Hagar.
Rocky IV.
Oh, no.
Rocky 3.
Correct.
Dang it, come on.
Jump in this.
All right, I think Ben wins this one.
No, but he hasn't gotten it yet.
Oh.
Oh, I didn't get it?
I thought you said Rocky 3.
No, he guessed Rocky 3, and I said no.
Oh, I thought you said yes.
Oh,
my bad.
Oh,
my bad.
Okay.
No, I said, Warren, jump in for the steal. No, not
Rocky. Rocky 2.
None of the Rocky movies are the answer.
Okay.
Rocky Balboa.
Frank Stallone, man. Is it a Van Damme movie?
No, it is not.
Oh.
Year?
Yeah, year?
The year is 1987.
You want to give
Lauren, it's one of your favorite genres, I think.
It's one of my favorite genres?
Yeah. Isn't your favorite genre arm wrestling movies?
I was going to say, oh, geez.
Oh, man.
Arm wrestling movies.
Over the Top.
Over the Top is correct. And For the Steal.
I've never seen that movie. I never would have gotten that.
Gosh, it is such an uplifting film. Please see that immediately.
I was going to say, I'm writing this down, especially if it's an arm wrestling drama, which is my favorite.
Over the Top, Ben, worth 7,900 points.
Oh!
Which up to 7,954 points. Allison Loring, with the one round win for 8,000 points, comes out on top.
There we go.
Again. How amazing is that, folks?
See?
A Cinderella story. Do you believe in miracles?
A pretty amazing comeback.
Oh,
not quite good enough.
Not quite good enough, though.
Balls awesome. To the wall, or butts to the wall, whatever.
Those are some hard movies you picked this time around.
No, this was really hard.
Man.
I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Well, I think I don't want to make it too easy. I thought you guys came to play, but...
Listen.
Blacking off on a Sunday, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
I mean, my Jeez. God.
All right, well, that will pretty much bring us to the end of this week's episode. Let's go around the circle and just tell people where they can find more of our work on the internet. Allison Loring, let's start with you.
You can find my writings over at Film School Rejects. And, of course, you can always find me on Twitter at Allison, A-L-L-I-S-O-N, Loring, L-O-R-I-N-G.
All right, Tyler?
You can find me at thesolarsentinel.blogspot.com, on Twitter, /NJNMpodcast. And there's a new chapter in the Swift and Steel saga up at the Sentinel right now, so check that out.
Indeed, indeed. All right, and you guys can track me down on Twitter, twitter.com/BenPayers. You can find me writing at geektyrant.com, firstshowing.net, filmonic.com, notjustnewmovies.com, the namesake for this podcast. And you can hear me occasionally, maybe sometimes, whenever, on the Geek Tyrant weekly podcast, which the format of which we are currently discussing switching around to maybe some sort of daily thing, like a 10-minute episode or something. I don't really know what we're going to do with that. So stay tuned at geektyrant.com for the future of what that podcast is going to turn into. Music for this episode will come courtesy of the soundtrack for the producers. And special thanks to Allison for stopping by and hanging out. Good having you back. So,
good to be back.
We will be watching something sometime soon. It's a mystery movie. So, have your...
Oh, the NJNM mystery movie. I like it.
Yeah, have your Netflixes queued and ready for when we announce that. And stay tuned to Facebook and Twitter and stuff. We'll make that announcement as soon as we figure out what we're going to be checking out. So
maybe.
Yeah, maybe.
Dot, dot, dot.
All right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. And we'll see you guys soon.